Welcome to your new Hollywood. You get it? Got it? Good.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever you're located, people. This is Gabrielle Howard from Your New Hollywood. You get it, got it, good. And I'm flying solo today. Kia is on location and doing what she does, and Dan is unavailable. So I'm solo. And you know what? This is kind of refreshing. I'll buy it. I don't want it to be, you know, a regular thing, but I'll buy it. Anyway, we've got a great, great show for you guys today. We have entertainment lawyer Diane Krause joining us, and we're going to be talking about child labor laws and the entertainment industry. And for those of you who are wondering what sort of sparked this topic, well, Kia and I have been thinking of having someone like Diane on the show for a long while, because both Kia and I, as some of our listeners may know, have a past history working in children's casting and in children's television for like the past 10 to 15 years. We get a lot of questions from friends, family, and people that we encounter about, should I sign this? Should my child be doing this and that? And some of the things we can answer, but other things we can't. And we're going to try and use this as sort of our, I don't know, I guess I could say this is sort of for selfish reasons as our our referral tool. But as I mentioned, I am here with Diane Krause. Diane is an entertainment attorney and head of the New York City firm Diane Krause and Associates. Did I get that right, Diane?
Yeah, okay. And Associates.
Okay. Some of your clients include producers, directors, writers, dancers, singers, magicians, actors, comedians, people in the industry. They come to you when they need assistance with contracts or other issues, correct?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's exactly. And then they, you know, sometimes it's transactional, sometimes it's production companies that need advice about how to deal with certain talent issues, including children-specific issues that deal with using children or infants, as we call them in the biz, minors or infants, that anyone who's under a certain age has special requirements, as we'll go into, that have, you know, specifically tailored for putting minors on TV shows. So.
And, you know, that's another reason that, another thing that sparked us having, discussing this topic today, because now more than ever, kids are taking the lead in a number of productions, both on stage and screen. We have Annie, which has opened on Broadway. We have the British production of Matilda, which is now in London, but is coming to Broadway in 2013. You have the kids in the comedy Modern Family who have upped their salaries, and I'm sure they're going to be receiving even more lines. We've got newcomers like this young lady who's starring in the indie film Beasts of the Southern Wild,
right,
which she's going to be probably doing the award show circuit.
Right. Right.
We have another newcomer, Bebe Wood, who's kind of holding her own on Fox's new comedy, The New Normal.
Right.
She's sort of coming across as one of the major cast members. So we're seeing a number of shows like this coming out where kids are really being asked to step up.
Right, exactly. And it's all in all different parts of the entertainment business, including the music business, where a lot of people, now they're both writing and performing. And there was actually an interesting discussion I had the other day at a music seminar that we gave about with some people at ASCAP that started talking about very young writers.
Mm.
And what they can do as very young writers. But we can get into that a little bit later also.
I'm interested to hear that, because I don't think we really stop to think about the music industry in terms of young people working unless they're on stage.
Right.
So, let's definitely get into that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to chat with Diane.
Hey, do you like what you're listening to? You should check out our blog at www.yougetitgotitgood.com. Or you can always shoot us an email at podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com.
Welcome back to the show, guys. As I mentioned earlier, I am here with entertainment attorney Diane Krause, and we're talking about child labor laws in the entertainment industry. Diane, can you explain to our audience why child labor laws exist in the entertainment industry?
Okay. So let's go back to, I guess, the Dickinsonian times when there were no child labor laws at all, where kids were working, you know, alongside adults, and they worked 50-hour days or, you know, full-time 16-hour days and were paid nothing. Mm-hmm. And they were dealt with by, there was something years and years later called the Fair Labor Standards Act that was enacted. And when it was enacted, it really didn't apply to child performers. It was really applied to a lot of other careers and, you know, workshops, you know, sweatshop situations and manufacturing situations. So the performers were still on needed to have their own set of rules that had to be promulgated. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of left to the states. So since at that time, it was really, you know, way back when, it was really New York, which had, and then the vaudeville circuit, which really had very few rules, but the parents were usually with the child. And then it was in California in the beginnings of the film industry and stage here in New York. And the unions themselves had some type of, you know, regulations for their members. But the real issues really became surrounding the financial, the education, and the general welfare of the child. And slowly, you know, certain things began to happen, and people started saying things like, well, we really need certain hours and certain codes and certain things that have to be done. And the unions took care of their own. In other words, after SAG started taking care of certain hours and times for members of AFTRA, but the non-union issues were still really a problem. And actually, just recently now, when we'll talk about the law, there's actually now some really interesting times that, you know, that I just wrote about it, that now the New York has just put in some very strict, like we call it Rule 186, that the Department of Labor is about to have come effective starting in January of 2013.
Mm, yeah, I started reading about those.
There's two different things. The first thing people should know is that a minor, which in most cases is somebody who is under the age of 18, okay, under the law, under the common law, is able to walk away from their contract, okay? So if they're doing their services and they say, you know, I sold you the cow or whatever, or I bought the cow, they can walk away and they don't have to pay the person for the cow, and they can keep the cow because they're not supposed to be able to make the same type of contracts because of their minorhood as an adult. So that's one thing. That really is that under common law historically, they were able to just walk away from a contract and not have any obligation. There's some very, very, very old common law that said if it was for necessaries, for eating, drinking, for supplying, you know, necessaries for his family or him, for himself to eat, maybe that could be held up in a case. But only in those cases could he actually have any responsibility for making a contract and sticking to it. And that's one part of one prong of the law. And the other prong of the law is that kids who work, okay, when in the old days, and this was a painful lesson to discover, in the old days when the kid earned money, when a child earned money, it turns out, especially in show business, that the parent was the one who was entitled to the funds. Mm-hmm. And the way we found this out was really painful. But years and years ago, back in the early 1900s, one of the biggest child stars was a kid who we all know is much older. In 1966, he was, you know, I think he was known as the Addams Family's television Uncle Fester.
Yes.
Jackie Coogan.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the early 1900s, he was the kid in Chaplin's The Kid. And apparently he was the, you know, Macaulay Culkin of his day. He did merchandising. He did all kinds of amazing things and earned, in those days, a few million dollars a year, which, you know, by today's standards is hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was is when he came of age, he found that he had very, very little money left. His father had died, his mother had remarried, and his stepmother and his stepfather and his mother had no money left, or very little money. And he sued them to the extent there was a few hundred thousand left, and he was told by the court, well, it was your parents' money anyway. You don't have any rights to that money.
Mm.
And as a result of that, they instituted the Coogan Law, which at least instituted in California that at the time that a child works, 15% of his gross income has to be put aside into an independent trust account to be preserved until the child performer reaches majority, which is 18.
Right.
So, I mean, I know 18 doesn't seem like a very old thing, but when you're a four-year-old earning money, at least when you're 18, you know there'll be something waiting for you, you know, at the time that you're that of age. And, you know, since then, everybody knows some certain stories of different other child actors that had the same issue with money, where they turned around and found that their money had dissipated. So it's at least a partial answer to financially protecting the child.
So in a nutshell, they stole his millions. He ended up with nothing.
Well, they either stole it or they spent it, or they did a lot of other things to it. It's unclear what happened to the money, but it definitely wasn't. They really didn't account to him for it. And this Coogan law at least puts at least 15% of the gross. Now remember, it's the gross, and you still have to pay accountants and agents and managers. So at least, and you pay taxes. So at least the gross is some meaningful amount of money that gets put away into this account. There's lots of other things. I mean, we can go into what happens, you know, about the Coogan account and how money can be taken out of the Coogan account and the difference between a locked account versus a not locked account.
Well, that was one of my questions, actually. Yeah. I'm sorry if I stepped on you. I think we're overlapping.
Okay. Yeah.
But who monitors that these funds are indeed going into an account?
Well, it's interesting. In California, I'm not sure. There's a lot more information about Coogan accounts, at least with respect to unions, on the SAG. The SAG-AFTRA website is really, really helpful. And also the Department of New York State has some interesting information about the Coogan accounts. But I think the SAG-AFTRA website, if you Google it and go on there, really gives you a lot of good information. Most really good agents that I talk to, really reputable agents, will request that the account be locked, which means that the parent really can't remove money.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, there is no, in New York, in fact, I just wrote a letter to this Department of State for changing, we have some comments to the new regulations, and there's definitely a request, you know, there's definitely an obligation, not only do you have to get a labor permit for each child that lives in New York or works in New York, and you have to set up a Coogan account and put 15% in, and you have to show that you opened the account. But there's nothing to show that you didn't take money out of the account. And one of the things I recommended was every year there should be a report with a copy of the bank account submitted saying I didn't take any money out, because I've experienced, unfortunately, the situations where a 14-year-old kid put the money in and there was really nobody looking at it, except I was getting copies of the statement sent to me, but the money was being taken out and there was nothing I could do about it.
Mm.
So it's a partial fix, but not a complete fix.
Okay.
So it's not a perfect thing. I mean, technically the child can go after the parent for the money, but it's not 100% yet. So we're still struggling with that part of the reporting requirement.
I guess I'm just sort of confused as to why, you know, like they're so strict with like 401ks and, you know, you get taxed and when you withdraw early, all these other accounts and other, you know, financial things.
Right.
Yet with this is still sort of kind of loosey-goosey. It's like, why?
I think it's just because it's still money you have to pay taxes on. Mm-hmm. You're putting aside this 15%, but you're still paying taxes. So the 85% has to bear the burden of the taxes, the agents, and everything else.
Mm.
And also, 18 is not the... I mean, most people, when you're 18 years old, I mean, I used to make jokes that when the money got to an 18-year-old, I'm not sure that they knew what to do with the money either. You know?
Well, I really don't believe they do know what to do with it. It's funny because when I think of that, just when you say that, I think of actors like Emma Watson. I remember reading Emma Watson, who played Hermione in Harry Potter. I think both of her parents are attorneys. So when she came of age to inherit her money, her parents sent her, shipped her off to some sort of financial boot camp.
Right.
Exactly. To learn how to juggle that.
Right.
Which I wish all parents would do.
I just always used to have images when I was doing the, you know, the approval side of the thing, where they also request to put at least 15%, if not more, in. And I had this terrible feeling that the money would come out when the kid's 18 and he'd be out there buying some big, huge sports car. You know? So it wasn't the best. It's not the best solution. It's it's not the best fix, but at least it was a response to what happened in the past. But there's still stories every day of parents who, you know, still manage to get a hold of a lot of the money, or a lot of the money comes out of those accounts. And you know, I always like to hear when I'm giving parents advice, I always like to hear that not only is there a Coogan account put aside, but there's also a separate account where the child has that money put aside.
Right.
But the reality is some people really do need that money for the child's career and for other things, and you can't really restrict it. You know, sometimes the child is providing some income for the family, so it's hard to to make those judgment calls until you know the situation.
Well, I think the one thing that parents may not think about is that when that child comes of age, even if they had to withdraw monies for certain things, and understandably, you know, there's like, I don't know, training equipment, workout stuff, whatever, do they ever take into account the fact that their child may turn around and hire an attorney to say, look, I understand you did the best you could, but I want somebody to investigate this because I really do feel like it was mismanaged. I mean, I think the last thing they think of is right. that can happen, but it can.
Right. It can. I mean, it really can. It's especially, you're better off at least keeping very, very good records on behalf of your child. So that's at least there's something there where there's a requirement to open the account, put the money in. It's actually the employer has to make sure that the parent has put the money in and take a copy of the statement and hold it for 6 years as a reporting requirement. They're trying to make it less than 6 years, but because it's a pain in the neck for the employer. But that's what the New York laws say, and I have a feeling that you know, California is similar also. They're pretty strict about making sure some percentage of the gross income is put aside. And it used to be in New York that you only could get that if the contract got approved. Now it's just across the board. Any child that works or resides in New York has this money put aside no matter what. The only problem you have sometimes is that there are situations like in reality shows or in certain, I've dealt with like some internet shows or shows that are very low budget where the child isn't paid, you know. And in those cases, there's no money, but they still need to get the work permits. They still need to have all the other requirements of 186, which means the time and making sure that they get the proper hours off and they're, you know, they have proper custodians or the guardians watching them. It's different for theater, actually. There are different ratios of custodians to individuals because it's smaller backstage is the argument. I just sent it. One of my colleagues is the lawyer for Matilda. And the other day I sent him over the new regs and said, let me know if you're going to be asking for a variance, because it was things like, you have to stop if you have infant, you know, if a kid's under 16, or I think it's under 18, but 16, you have to stop playing at 12:30 at night. But it's 10 o'clock at night if it's TV shows in New York, but it's 12:30 at night if it's Broadway. So
okay.
It'll be interesting to hear his responses to that.
Most shows end before that.
Yeah, I know. That's what I figured. I didn't think Matilda was going to run that late.
I don't
know. You know, because the thing is, I'm about to do it with Annie also. It's usually, I mean, there's usually a lot of other issues that have to do with kids and wrangling kids. You know, there's always a kids wrangler and stuff on Broadway, but the whole other thing.
You've seen these laws change over the years.
Well, the real thing is that it always was, in my experience, I was always I really never got involved. There weren't that many regulations under the New York law. You know, when I was called in, it was usually for the approval process, where a child was either needed an employer needed to have the contract approved because they wanted to make sure that it was, you know, there was a film that had to be made. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make sure that the child could not, you know, renege on the contract, or they'd have to appoint a guardian ad litem, someone to represent the child's interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was either in one of those two positions. So, which is, both of them have their, you know, sometimes when you're representing the child's interests and the child really wants to make the movie, the child is not very fond of you, because you're asking for things like, well, can they get a raise, and why is this one getting more money than that one? And they're looking at me going, I just want the part. Will you leave me alone? You know? And yeah. It happened, trust me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, this person got more money than you. Why is that happening? Your agent didn't negotiate. Let's get you the more money. And they're like, I don't care. I just want the part. Just, you know, bug off. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing that's really changed, is that the new regulations now really have a lot. There's a lot of, unfortunately or fortunately, some of my colleagues are not thrilled that there's a lot more work involved now to hire children that live in New York. But I think that it really is consistent with what has to happen if you're going to be hiring younger children.
Well, they'd be more concerned if it was their child.
Right, exactly. That's the whole thing.
You know.
And then, yeah, I mean, that's number one. And then the other thing is, there's the whole world of reality shows has changed a lot of what's going on also, because that's a new phenomenon, relatively new phenomenon. And the lawyers who work in the field, you know, started getting phone calls a few years ago about very, very young children that were being taped as part of a family, and there were no breaks. They were just sort of followed 24/7. What kind of schooling were they getting? What was going on? And, you know, without mentioning names, and they didn't necessarily have to come from New York State, and the rumor was that the children weren't getting paid, the parent was getting paid all the money, and there weren't any work permits, and so there was a lot of concern. I kept getting phone calls from, you know, people putting together reality shows asking about what they had to do to get the kids somehow approved, you know, and every story I heard, I said, I'm not sure you can get the kid approved, given what you're going to do to them. I mean, it sounds like you're going to have to probably give them a little bit more breaks or treat them a little bit, you know, have a few doubles or something. It doesn't sound like you're going to, you know, it doesn't sound like you're putting in twins. You're using the same person over and over and over again. So,
you know what? Let's take a break because you've tapped on reality show. And I think this is all, this is also threaded to the changes that are going on with Part 186, which I guess I'd like you to explain to our listeners.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Like what you're listening to? Then shoot an email to podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com or leave a comment on our blog at yougetitgotitgood.com.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with entertainment attorney Diane Krause, and we are discussing child labor laws and the entertainment industry. And when we left off, Diane, you had tapped on the idea of reality shows and the many, many questions that started popping up when reality shows started just, you know, exploding like pop rocks on television.
Right,
and,
exactly.
I felt like when you were tapping on the reality shows, you were also sort of maybe traveling on into Part 186, which we mentioned earlier, which if you could, in layman's terms, explain to our audience what it is.
Right. Well, 186 is the long-awaited regulations that sort of put together all the different laws that relate to child performers' laws in New York. I mean, there's four different areas. There's the education law, the estates and trust law, which we already talked about, the Coogan accounts. There's certain labor law sections, and then there's the arts and cultural affairs law that talks about the fact that you have to approve a contract for it to be binding in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So what 186 does is get into the nitty-gritty, and in some people's opinion, changes a little bit to some of the rules. But after the last, in 2004, when they promulgated the Child Performer and Trust Act, then everybody waited. It took a long time for these regs to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And 186 is just a real section about all about child performers and the regulations, and they've been gone through a lot of revisions, and a lot of people in the industry put in their comments. And I actually was on the phone last week with PAA's attorney and SAG-AFTRA's attorney, and I was also discussing some non-union issues, some issues about underage models, because they have a whole other set of issues.
Oh my goodness, that's a whole other industry.
Yeah, a whole other industry about, you know, what happens to them and why, you know, and there's some stuff. I had lunch with two model lawyers that really brought me, you know, really opened my eyes in terms of what happens with runways and fashion shows to underage models and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's a whole other world that, you know, not necessarily well enough covered by now by these regulations. So it took quite a while, and they're about to come out in January of 13. The last comments are being changed. And within that, they put in the definition of reality show. I guess
I'd love to hear this.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone really cares, because we're
do.
People.
We care, right, people? Nod your head yes.
186-1S, you can look it up. It's defined as a visual and or audio recording or live transmission by any means or process now owned or now known or hereinafter devised of a child appearing as himself or herself in motion pictures, television, visual data, and or sound recordings on the internet or otherwise, and shall not include the recording or live transmittal of non-fictional athletic events, academic events, such as but not limited to spelling bees and science fairs and interviews and newscasts or talk shows. I'm loosely quoting it right now. That's the way I quoted it in my blog.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what it says is if you're following your kid around as themselves and they're appearing as themselves, then that's considered part of a reality show.
But does that count, like, if it's somewhat scripted? I mean, we know they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting. If it's scripted, it's one thing. They're really much more concerned about whether or not you have to... This particular regulation, it's very interesting, has to deal with whether or not you get a child's permit, and when do you need to get a child's permit, okay? So they're saying you have to get a child's permit if you're going to do all this type of stuff. And then it became an issue of, okay, this kid is being taped for a reality show, but then he goes in and he's part of the spelling bee in his school. Do you need a permit for the spelling bee kids? And there's a typo, actually, and we're trying to get this clarified, but we think that you really don't need the permit for the spelling bee kids. Mm-hmm. But we think that if they're smart, they probably should get everybody to sign off a release saying we give permission for our kid to, you know, but they don't really necessarily need a child permit. You should know, by the way, the regulations say that if we don't get a child's permit, like one child's permit, they can shut you down, the production down.
Yeah, they can, but that's always been the law.
Yeah, so it's not pretty. I mean, you know, the whole point is you want to have a little bit of leeway here, because if you find out that there's one permit missing on the child, you know, one kid at the spelling bee didn't get a permit, mm-hmm. and you were supposed to. So they're trying to get make sure that you didn't need to get a permit for the whole spelling bee group.
Right.
If you're shooting, you know, as part of a reality show. So the reality show is, yes, if he's there being shot as part of a reality show, you need to get a permit for him. But mm-hmm. if he's in a school environment, the other kids in the school really don't have to be shot as part of the, you know, as part of the reality show. Unless, I guess, there's interaction or they become a regular, you know, regular character as part of the show, but not as part of a group. And I guess an interview in a newscast or a talk show isn't considered something you need a permit for either.
Right.
So,
but I guess, like, the rules for reality shows differ from kid that's on television series or on Broadway in the sense of, you know, they may not be required to have set tutoring because they're already enrolled in school, or, you know, does there need to be a nurse on set, et cetera? I mean,
right. Well, that's the thing. It's interesting. We could probably try to get a variance on that, but there may have to be a nurse on set if there's some really young children,
mm-hmm.
or if the mother. If the child is an interesting rule I never knew about until I read the regs, and it's the same. It's very similar to the one they just set up in California, where basically they don't want any child that's younger than 15 days old on a set. And
that
I've heard
sense.
Some real horror stories of people literally dragging some infants much younger than 15 days old, you know, out to do some work. So, and you still need a pediatric nurse on the
mm-hmm.
set.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was watching an episode of one of the TV shows on ABC the other night, and they showed an infant in an incubator, and I'm thinking that kid better be, you know, older than 15. But, you know, it was great. You know, here I am in the middle of this drama. But you know, the thing is that they really haven't talked about enforcement, but I guess there will be some type of a way that eventually people will be able to figure out that if there's not that a permit hasn't been gotten when there has to be one.
I wonder how they're going to be able to keep on top of that.
Yeah, I know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I wonder. It's I think, you know, things have changed so drastically in terms of the internet, and everything's going so digital. You can get up to the minute information.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it'll be easier than it was as compared to, like, I don't know, the late 70s, early 80s.
Right. I mean, something they put in on this round was basically that there will be a sex offender check made for any teacher
mm-hmm.
that's supposed to be hired. And that was really, I think, a result of the recent news things that happened over the course of this year. So,
why is it only teachers?
I guess those are the people who are, I mean, it could be guardians, except the guardians are supposed to be known by the parents.
That's interesting.
Parents. Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, given that they're exposed to so many people, it's like, I just find it weird, but, you know. Hey peeps, Gabrielle here. If you're enjoying listening to the show, we'd love it if you would follow us on Twitter. We're at U, the letter U, get it, got it, good. And we'd love to hear your show ideas, questions, or comments. Feel free to email us. We're at podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com. Okay, I'm out. Enjoy the rest of the show. Well, peeps. folks, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up the show. We've run out of time, but we will continue our conversation with Diane Krause next week, in which we'll dive into the instances in which people should seek out the assistance of an entertainment attorney. I want to thank Diane so much for taking the time out to chat with us and download such helpful information. Please be sure to follow Diane on Twitter. She's at Diane Krause. And please be sure to check out her website. She's at www.dianekrause.com. Thank you so much for checking in, everyone. We look forward to sharing another show with you next week. Take care and have a great day.